Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that's devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and indeed largest segment of society. To those who have come to realize that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they have largely become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to discuss any of these, or the overall solution to what ails humankind, is toll-free. It's 877-300-7645. Sometimes you read things in the news that are hard to believe. And I have spent a lot of time on this program talking about the lost souls that govern the Ukraine out of Kiev, and that they are among, if not the most disingenuous people on earth. And that's saying a lot when you consider the President of the United States lies every time he opens his mouth and is universally counterproductive, a complete ignoramus. You really have to work hard in today's world to get the highest rung on the disingenuous ladder. But the Ukraine has it. And their announcement over the weekend was just it was just laughable. Now, keep in mind, the Ukraine was part of Russia for hundreds upon hundreds of years, centuries upon centuries, and only became independent about 20 years ago. And it became independent only because communism failed in the USSR. And during that time where the central government in the USSR was faltering, the West encouraged regions of the old Soviet Union to jettison themselves from it, just to vote to be independent of it. And the West accepted all of those votes, which is kind of interesting that when former regions that were part of Russia want to return to be part of Russia because their experiments with independence have failed so miserably, we don't accept those votes. But we did accept the votes of independence. We just don't accept the votes of reunification. But nonetheless, this experiment in the Ukraine has been a miserable disaster. There have been two coups, both where popularly elected governments were overturned by riotous mobs, the most recent taking place a little over a year ago. And economically, the place has been an absolute unmitigated disaster. They have borrowed boatloads of money in the many billions of dollars from the International Monetary Fund and have never paid back anything they borrowed. Every time they borrow money, they agree that they're going to change their behavior. They don't change their behavior. They continue to rack up debt, and they then put their hand out and say, we need more money. We're going to default on what we owe you, and we need more money. And the West stupidly supplies them with more money. And they've done this four or five times. The last time they had their hand out, the Russians had even agreed, you know, because of the fact that the Ukraine is dependent upon Russia for natural gas and oil, that the Russians, and the fact that most of Ukrainians actually speak Russian, and many very significant minority are ethnic Russians, and that anybody over the age of 20 has been a Russian citizen sometime in their lives, that it made sense that Russia try to bail them out, and Russia had agreed to terms of doing so. But then there was this upwelling in the Kiev area, probably instigated by Washington, to turn down the Russians, even though the Russians were willing to give them $15 or $20 billion, in favor of borrowing money again from the West. And they had done that four or five times. They hadn't paid their bills back. But here is now the West offering to loan them some $25 billion, none of which they'll pay back. You know, increasing their debt now to $50 or $60 billion collectively. And it put the ethnic Russians that wanted to maintain ties with Russia at odds with the Kiev regime. And just created a mess. And so once that occurred, then the United States and Europe, through NATO, encouraged the Kiev regime to pummel the ethnic Russians who wanted to reunite with Russia into submission by deploying the Ukrainian military against their own citizens. Well, that finally came to a head when the Ukrainians realized that, you know, this is a mess. I mean, we're continuing to use aerial bombardment and artillery and tanks against civilians in Donetsk and Luhansk. And what they want, they keep on voting for, is independence from us and to reunify back with Russia. And so they voted in favor of allowing that region, Donetsk, Luhansk, to be independent. And then they, I would assume at the insistence of the United States, of the CIA and like, they maintained a military presence in the regions they said could be independent and continued to bombard the civilian areas, the urban areas, from their airports. Well, the Russians are saying, are you nuts? I mean, this is absolute insanity. All along, the Ukrainians are begging for fuel oil for the winter and for gas. But the Russians are saying, but you owe us $3 or $4 billion in gas and oil that you've used that you haven't paid for. You know, pay for what you've used and we'll supply oil and gas going forward. Well, here's the news. Reuters, Ukraine's top priority, according to the Kiev regime, is to build an army strong enough to stop Russian military aggression. Now, do you know how much the Ukraine would have to spend if they really wanted to stop Russia from invading the Ukraine, should Russia choose to invade the Ukraine? Now, by the way, Russia hasn't invaded the Ukraine. But should Russia choose to invade the Ukraine, do you know how much the Ukraine would have to spend to stop that? I would assume that the Russians, and the last reports I've seen on Russia, they spent about $60 or $70 billion on their military a year. Now, about 10% of what America spends on its military a year. And in the Ukraine, they spend about $5 billion on their military a year, and every report that's been done by an investigative journalist on the Ukraine's military spending, 80% of it is fraud. 80% of what they spend. So they spend $5 billion. $1 billion of it actually goes to training, personnel, and equipment, and $4 billion is just confiscated by the scumbags that are involved in the military and economic apparatus, political apparatus of the Ukraine. It's just really scummy people. When I say scummy people, hesitation, the two worst acts as part of mankind's worst behavior. The Holocaust is mankind's all-time worst behavior. The two most egregious events as part of the Holocaust were both perpetrated by Ukrainians. So I have no compunction to say that they are despicable people. And fraud in the Ukrainian government is as prevalent as it is, for example, in Afghanistan, where you find about 80% of the money that is spent is confiscated. So if they need to spend, let's say, to keep the Russians at bay, let's say that's $60 billion a year. Well, you got to multiply that by five because of the fraud that's inherent in their military spending. So here's a country that is totally dependent on Western handouts because it's economically unviable, spending $5 billion on their military a year, that needs to increase that 12 times if they can eliminate graft, and 60 times if they can't, to compete with the Russians. And that's sane? I mean, you're borrowing $20 billion a year to stay afloat. And now you want to go from $5 billion in military spending to $60 billion? Well, at least one of the things is just obvious, that the West has been manipulating the Kiev regime to create a NATO threat to Russia, that NATO can't survive without having their Cold War enemy back, that NATO has been totally and completely useless in all things related to Islam. You know, the NATO alliances have failed miserably as it relates to the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, this new war against the Islamic State. Heck, you can't even get Turkey to allow you to do anything through the neighboring country. So NATO has been a complete and utter fiasco. And I guess NATO has finally said, you know, we don't have any viability. The last time we had any viability, last time people were willing to spend money and pay attention to us was during the Cold War. So let's revive the Cold War, and we'll get the battleground to be the Ukraine, and we'll instigate a coup there in Kiev to divide the Ukraine against each other and to provoke Russia. And then we'll blame everything that we're going to do in Ukraine, including funding an enormous military that the Ukraine cannot afford, just to harass the Russians, so that the Russians then have to escalate. And when the Russians escalate, then we'll have a justification for forcing governments as part of NATO to pay more attention to us and to pay us more money. I mean, that's the only rational explanation of what we're witnessing now in the Ukraine, for this tiny region that is in the midst of a civil war, to say that their top priority is to build an army strong enough to stop Russian military aggression. Ukrainian Prime Minister said on Friday, as he made recommendations for top positions in a new coalition government, that was the principal goal of his administration. Stunning. This article from Reuters says the prospect of an all-out war returning to eastern Ukraine has piled pressure on the country's struggling economy. No. Ukraine has never had anything other than not a struggling economy, but a failed economy since it declared its independence from Russia. It has never had a prosperous economy. It isn't viable as an independent country. And there was never an all-out war between the two regions of what has been called the Ukraine. The government of Kiev definitely sought to harass the ethnic Russians who wanted independence and attack them militarily, and the ethnic Russians confiscated weapons from Ukrainian bases in their region and opposed them. But all-out war, no. And its effect on the economy, minuscule by comparison to the aid that America is providing them. It then reads that Ukraine's pro-Western leaders in NATO have accused Russia of sending soldiers and weapons to help the pro-Russian rebels in the east launch a new offensive in the war that has killed more than 4,000 people. Ugh, absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. The reason that the war continues is because the Kiev regime won't honor the terms of the independence agreement that they voted in favor of. And they're continuing to keep their military at the airports of the very towns and cities that they granted independence to, and are continuing to bombard the communities from the airports. Now, I don't blame Russia for saying, you know, we're just not going to allow our people to be pummeled here. And so, to the degree the Russians may have responded, it would be moral and appropriate for them to do so. But the instigator here is clearly the United States and NATO. We have John on the phone calling in from Toronto. He's got a story I guess some insights that he is seeking as a result of a story. Hello, John.
Hey, Ada. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to you for a long time. And the reason I'm calling is I'm pretty desperate right now. We've had some, supernatural, I guess, activity going on, and it came to a head this morning. If you want, I could relay some of the stories to you.
All right, I'll begin by listening, but I have to tell you, John, that I'm really uncomfortable providing advice when someone talks about a personal experience with spirits. My experience has always been that that's really dangerous stuff, and that there's not a lot of advice that one can give under those circumstances. But I'll do my best. Go ahead.
Right. So I've been making a lot of positive changes in my life lately, and I feel that might be what's caused some of this to happen. First thing I did is reconciling a relationship with my mom and coming under better terms with her. And after I had done that, I had a dream. And in the dream, I was at church with some church coordinator lady, and which doesn't make any sense, right? Because I'm, or I consider myself a child of the covenant and all that, and I'm Torah observant, and me and my wife participate in the Moed. So I was, I was like, well, how come, you guys don't do the Moed Mikre? I asked the church lady, and right. She sort of scoffed at me, and she said, oh, the Moed, those don't mean anything. And I said, oh, really? So I said, so Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim, and then she started naming them at the same time as I was, sort of like taunting me, and Shavua, Teruah, and then I couldn't sort of remember.
Yes, clearly you're having a dream. You're projecting because there isn't one Christian in a thousand, maybe not even one Christian in a million, that would know the Hebrew names of the invitations to meet with God.
Yeah,
so this is a projected dream as opposed to a real experience.
Oh yeah, no, this was a dream. This was a dream.
Right.
It didn't really make sense that she would know about any of this. And then
they wouldn't know about any of them. And if you were to call them Passover, they'd probably have heard of Passover. That would probably be the extent of the ones they've even heard of, and only then as it's translated from Pesach to Passover. And, their claim would be that, according to Paul, that those things no longer mean anything, and it's all been replaced by their gospel of grace. It'd, of course, be wrong. It'd, of course, be taunting God by making the statement, but that's where they'd be. We'll return. And welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with John. Before I have John continue to discuss his situation, I just want our listeners to know that I'm on pretty thin ice here. John's talked about a dream thus far, and while I understand that Yahweh has given certain individuals, his prophets over time, the ability to interpret dreams for specific reasons, I have not been given that skill. I've not asked for that skill. And I absolutely would not endeavor to engage in dream analysis because I'm not qualified. Second is that while I'm aware that there are a lot of talk radio programs where people call in and say, I've got a challenge, I'd like to present the challenge, and then the host offers a solution, I don't think you can get to know another person's situation well enough. Just listening to them talk, and I'm certainly not trained to provide advice in this regard. My advice, I'm quite certain it would be worthless. All I can do, and the reason I'm going to continue to listen, but with these caveats for all of our other listeners, that is that all I can do is that because of the fact John has said that he's the participant in the covenant, is I can listen to what he has to say, and if God has shared with us a somewhat similar circumstance and a solution, and is to our prophets and psalms, I am happy to share what I know. But that's pretty much what the full extent of what I can do, because as I've shared with our listeners so many times on this show, I'm happy and delighted to present Yah's perspective on things. But I'm really out of my comfort zone to do anything more than that. So with that reintroduction, John, the floor is yours. You're talking about this projected dream and the very odd mocking Christian response.
Yeah, thanks. So as I got to around Yom Kippurim and the, mm-hmm. the list of the seven steps, she started to approach me. And as she approached me, there was sort of like a decloaking thing that happened in the middle of her two eyes, and a third eye appeared, and she kept repeating, Iana, Iana, Iana. And eventually I got out Yom Kippurim, and then she was looking like pretty demonic at that point. And then I woke up, and I remember the last, Moed was Sukkah.
Right.
So I went on to, it reminded me of Inanna, which is a Sumerian goddess. And I went and did some searching, and she's supposed to be the same person as Ishtar and Isis and all that.
Okay.
And, the pictures of her, she had an all-seeing eye on her forehead kind of a thing. They refer to her as the eye goddess.
Right.
So that really freaked me out.
Yeah, Isis in the Egyptian religion. She's made her way. The Queen of Heaven and Mother of God is prevalent throughout pagan religions. Her name is Astarte in the prophets.
She refers to herself as Iana.
Okay.
As far as my dream goes, anyways.
Okay. Yeah. It's like every pagan god and goddess. There have been scholarly tomes that have sought to track the various names and the manifestation and characterizations. But the reason that I'm never comfortable doing that and saying, well, this was originally Samaramis, became Astarte, became, so-and-so, Isis in Egypt and on, and is that it's never a direct sequential step from one to the other. There's always amalgamized characteristics of other gods and goddesses, and it's never all that straightforward. So to say, this name is associated with this god or goddess, it gets pretty confusing. I'm not surprised that it's confusing. That's the whole purpose of all of these various religious myths, is to create confusion. It's like the Christian Jesus Christ is modeled after Dionysus. Now, that doesn't mean that every single aspect of Dionysus is prevalent within Jesus Christ, but boy, you sure got a bunch of them. And not all of those characteristics move into Bacchus, but yet in Bacchus you have other characteristics that are also prevalent within Christianity that didn't manifest themselves within Dionysus. So it's lots of confusion in this regard. Okay, so anyway, you had a dream, and in the dream the Christian antagonist cited the name of a pagan goddess that pagan goddess, by the way, today is manifest in Roman Catholicism as Mary, the Queen of Heaven and Mother of God. She is same basic characteristics as the goddess Astarte, Samaramis, in the old Babylonian religion.
Right. So, yeah, and then not last night, but the night before, I had another. This dream was much more frightening. That dream really didn't bug me too much. I kind of felt like, you know, if you're over the target, you'll be taking flak. So I felt like I was doing some stuff good, and like I've been feeling this energy drain. It's been like a week since that dream that I just recounted. But I'll tell you what happened last night. I was feeling, you know, like some bad mojo, and I got drifted off to sleep. But I didn't realize that I was asleep. Like in my dream, I felt like I was still awake in my bed, and I was listening to some white noise and some binaural beats. Because I can hear like everything outside of my apartment. I live in downtown Toronto. And so I was listening to that, and faintly it sounded like my own voice coming from my headphones that I had in. I heard Satan, 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 Satan. And then I sort of had like a sleep paralysis thing going on where I rolled over to my wife, and I was trying to wake her up, and she was like, And I finally woke her up, and I took the headphones off, and blasting out of the headphones, this is might be frightening, but I'm going to imitate what the noise that happened. It was, nun, 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 nun. And then I woke up. And I was super afraid, so I went to Google again after, and I looked up nun, and the Hebrew nun is actually a snake symbol.
Yeah.
So
Ninus is the basis of Nimrod, which was the son of first the husband of and the king of first Babylon. The founder of the first Babylonian religion is Nimrod or Ninus. He married Semiramis, who's then known as Astarte, and then when he died from a because he was a hunter, died in a boar attack, they had the weeping for Tammuz, because when Nun is, and Nun also means son, is reborn, the wife claims that the son impregnated her on Easter Sunday, and that she bore the son of the son, and that is Nun or Ninus, and known also as Nimrod. So that's all stuff that that drives right to the heart of the old Babylonian religion. You know, what I can tell you, John, and you know, I've already.
Can I finish really quickly first?
Sure.
So that came to tonight, and this morning, I guess, and again feeling some bad mojo, and me and my wife both woke up at the same time, and I had an object on my desk that got thrown off the desk. And we were scared, and we started reciting, like, Yahweh's prayer, like, you know, Yahweh, like, I was getting her, and, you know, like, and so we were doing that, and then, bang, huge knock on our bed, and we were just like, oh, my God, we have to get out of here right now, and we just left or whatever, and we found, you know, a YouTube audio of the Torah where they use the name Yahweh instead of Lord, so we were like listening to that, and we're not really too positive what to do. Like you said, if you have any advice or if there's any precedents and stuff like that that you could reference.
The only stories that we have really about Satan trying to mess with people is the stories of Job. So, you know, if you want to know, I mean, I don't want to claim that that Satan can't mess with somebody. They can't do any harm to you. Once you're a member of the covenant, it's forever. They can't do any harm to you. Can Satan mess with people? It's just that your eternal fate and that of your wife is established and affirmed. But
I'm aware of that. It is super frightening, though.
And I will tell you that, you know, I've never experienced it personally. I've always typically chuckled when Christians pretend that Satan is doing bad stuff to them, because for the most part, Satan is just, he's not omnipresent, he's not omnipowerful, he's he's very limited in what he can do, and beyond influencing folks like Paul and Muhammad, where he can have a big influence over a lot of people, he typically doesn't get involved. And since you and your wife are not going to go start a new religion, you're not a likely victim of all this kind of stuff. But my first response is to do your best just to ignore it, because there is no reason, since you are a member of the covenant, your souls are secure, and since you're not going to go off and start a religion on behalf of the adversary, there is nothing that he can do with you. So I think to the largest extent possible, I'd ignore it. If you want to see how and the limitations that Satan has in terms of influence, the story, read Job. The story of Job, it's actually the first book that was written before the Torah. It's marvelous reading. And you can see what the old adversary attempted to do with Job, and how Job ultimately prevailed. And it's the closest analog to what you're talking about, John.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Be at peace with it. Relax. As I say, there's absolutely nothing that can be done to your souls, and there's just no reason for him to bother with you. But read the story of Job. Welcome back to Shattering This. We have Glenn on the line. I'm hoping that Glenn wants to talk about the absurd story that I shared about the Ukraine, rather than my less than adequate job of trying to interpret dreams. But I'm going to tell you, Glenn, either one is fair game. But as I said, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to share that I do have a dream, and in it, I lived in a world where a man was judged by the content of his character rather than the color of his skin.
Ah, okay, yeah, I'm familiar with that dream. Yeah,
a little different type of dream.
What's always interesting to me about that line from Martin Luther is that there are really a lot of things. One is that how the FBI tried to get Martin Luther to commit suicide. How the FBI actually violated the U.S. Constitution, and its zeal to demean the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King. It's, our FBI should be disbarred. We should be disbanded just for the way that it responded to Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. But the second is that those who would claim to be African-American activists are almost always focused on the color of a man's skin.
Okay.
And that it's become pure hypocrisy. That those of us who don't express any racism, and I have absolutely no racism. I'm opposed to a lot of religions, but religion and race are very different things. When I see statistics and we're dealing with things that are race-based, I'm deeply troubled by that. When you have this event in Ferguson and it's presented as a white cop shooting an unarmed black boy, I'm really bothered by those depictions. But that's those who would claim to be advocating the legacy of Martin Luther King, they can't get beyond the skin color. And
right,
so they're the antithesis of what King actually promoted.
Actually, I was just trying to relieve you of the anticipation of another disturbing dream call. I was also kind of going to say, welcome to the wonderful world of radio time consumption shilling calls. And I can't really say for sure, but such as previous caller, could be someone who's completely earnest, or the call also had the same a tone of some of the call that might be done by a shill who's just trying to, get you going right to say things.
I don't think so. I think, I am no expert here, so so.
No, no.
I could absolutely be wrong, and I'm out of my element, but my sense is that John was Ernst and that he is concerned.
Oh, yeah.
And that John is a member of the Covenant family, and he is concerned about this, and so my only comfort level in all of this is there is one elongated story of how the adversary went to bother a fellow that you wouldn't think the adversary would have any interest in. That would be Job. And it's really an interesting story as to how Job and his friends cope with this and the limitations that are put on Satan. Because for the most part, I mean, I have to tell you, I have zero personal experience with the adversary and his minions. And while I think I know him as well as about anybody because I've studied Islam, I've studied Christianity, and I've studied Freemasonry, for example, I mean, I think I understand him pretty well. I've just not had any direct bother, and so I'm just not, and I'm one of those that believes that 99.999999% of exorcisms are fake.
Right.
So and I think the vast majority of people that think that they are having a demonic encounter really aren't.
Right.
All of that being said, I think this caller was genuine. I accepted it as genuine, and I went about as far as I'm capable of going. Any further than that, I'm really out of my element.
Well, just remember, don't whatever you do, don't cross the streams. Anyway,
so what do you think about I don't know if you listened to the first story on the Ukraine. That's right up your alley, where the Ukraine's new prime minister said the single top priority is for the Ukraine to build an army capable of rebuffing Russian military aggression. You know, that would require them to go from
insane.
$5 billion a year to $60 billion, and probably five times that because of the graft in Ukraine. How does a country
insane.
That is bleeding, $25 billion a year in deficits do that?